the Lord had literally given us the design for the disaster relief unit. So I called it the divine design. And now it's under construction. Building the first mobile disaster unit was another adventure in watching God at work. The committee approved my plans and my selection as the builder, and then they went back to their regular work considering the committee's work done. But I was left with an enormous project and two promises. Ms. Eula Mae Henderson, director of the Women's Missionary Union, promised $26,000 for the construction. And Bob Dixon said Texas Baptist Men would help when I started the construction. The construction plan had an item number 1, find a trailer. Dr. Greer and I visited every used trailer sales company in Dallas and could not find the one we could agree on. I started calling moving van companies and asking if they had a drop frame moving van in their surplus vehicle inventory. I located one in San Antonio, Texas. It was a Dorsey Electronics van with 45 feet long with cargo pods suspended beneath the frame. Oh, that would be ideal for storing tables. Just wonderful. I must insert another God thing at this point. 2 years before this project, I felt the need to enable Amigos Internacionales to be of a greater assistance to the River Ministry of Texas Baptist. There were so many requests to transport donated goods and building materials to the Rio Grande River Valley, I knew an 18-wheeler tractor-trailer unit was needed. I started praying for one. One Sunday in my Sunday school class at First Baptist Church in Dallas, a member mentioned that he was an attorney for Sears and Roebuck. After class, I asked him about the disposal process for their surplus freight tractors. He explained the bidding process and told me where they were parked in the warehouse area. When I explained the need, he gave me a name and a phone number to call. I saw 14 or 15 tractors on the lot and I inspected each one. They all were practically identical. I prayed, Lord, which one of these is the best? What should I ask or look for to find the best one? I immediately noticed that all of them had a broken windshield or a cracked windshield or except one. I bid $750 on that one. That was a bold step of faith because I did not have a dime to cover the bid, but I felt God's assurance that I was on the right track. The next Friday, I was notified that I was high bidder on that particular tractor and was instructed where to bring a check and pick it up. I prayed for funding all day Saturday. In class Sunday morning, I asked the attorney, how do you borrow money on something you do not own yet so you can pay for it? He asked, John, did you bid on that tractor without having any money to pay for it? I confessed, yes, sir, I did. In faith, I know it's what God wanted me to do. He looked at me in silence for a few seconds, pulled out his checkbook and began to write a check for the money. And he said, I've not done anything special for the Lord's service lately, so I'll cover this. By the way, the tractor is of no use without a trailer. Go back to the lot and bid on one. I'll cover that cost also. Amigos used that rig for 6 years before any repairs were necessary. It was that tractor which I took to San Antonio to pick up the trailer for the disaster unit. I planned my trip carefully in order to arrive back in Dallas before daylight and miss the heavy traffic, because this was the first time I'd driven one with a trailer on it. When I arrived in San Antonio, I knew I was doing God's will and that it was a very important step of ministry I was taking because Satan attacked in full force. I paid the company for the trailer. They closed for the day and all the employees left before I could get it connected to the trailer. Edwin Nusco, one of the three original trustees of Amigos, and first vice president of First National Bank of Athens, Texas, was the only one who had tractor trailer experience. He was the Amigos driver that had done all the logistics for the four hour freight transport. He was the only one who had ever driven it with as an 18-wheeler. I helped him hook it up several times, but I'd never driven it. I had a commercial driver's license, but I'd only driven wreckers and single axle freight trucks. And this was my main reason for trying to get back to Dallas before daylight. I backed under the trailer and heard a loud thump. Satisfied I'd captured the kingpin in the fifth wheel lock, I stepped down to find the kingpin had gone over the fifth wheel and was stuck ahead of it. Oh my. As I cranked the landing gear down so it would get higher and raise the trailer higher so I could pull out from under the pin, oh my, the landing gear stripped out and collapsed, dropping the trailer on the truck frame. When you're in trouble, it's amazing how quickly and easily sincere prayers offered to God. I was praying for God's help and wisdom. Later, I added a request that he would get Satan off my back, shut Satan's slandering mouth, and send him back to the abyss. That was prayed through gritted teeth as I had a spiritual temper tantrum. I know that term is not found in any systematic theology book, but several times I noticed psalmists had written a psalm while having one. It's okay to have one as long as you and God are on the same side of the problem. But when the problem comes between you and God, oh man, then you're on Satan's side. And that is not good. The only tool I had to raise the trailer and get it clear was a small hydraulic jack. I worked until 2 a.m. before I got everything connected correctly. Man, I was tired. I drove to Dallas in 6 hours and arrived in the middle of the morning rush hour traffic. The one thing I wanted to avoid at all costs. All lanes were full and it was bumper to bumper traffic. I prayed a lot. I was taking the rig to my home in East Dallas or in Mesquite. The homes have rear entry garages which are accessed from an alley. I had to back the trailer down an alley for 100 yards. The alley was only 12 feet wide. I really prayed a lot. The most difficult job was putting the trailer into my two-car driveway. It was so close, I had to move the rear of the trailer 6 feet to the right without moving the tractor for me to back it into my driveway. I used a little jack and bricks to do the job. I placed half of the jack base on the edge of a brick in the center of the rear axle. I raised it as high as it would go and put my shoulder against the left rear bulkhead and shove hard. The jack would tilt, the brick would crush, and the rear axle would move 12 inches sideways. 6 bricks, and 6 feet later, I was able to finish backing it into place, disconnected the tractor, and drive away. Ooh, God answers prayer. The next day, my wife was asked by our new neighbor across the alley if that trailer was there when we built our house. She said, no. My husband backed it in there yesterday. He replied, ma'am, I own a truck line and I want to hire him right now. Sometimes obedience to the Father makes you look a lot better than you really are. Well, honestly, God really does answer prayer. He answers prayer about the small stuff as well as the big stuff. After school the next day, my 9-year-old son pulled me aside and said, okay, Dad, I want you to give me a list of things to pray for because I want to have a part in this project. I've heard you talk about how building mobile clinics and how God answered your prayers for what was needed. I want to have God answer my prayers too, so I can tell people how good God is and how he works. Oh, I hugged him and told him that this would be a joint project of prayer for the two of us. Little did I know what an important part he would play a little later, and how much these answered prayers would influence the rest of his life. The construction began. Wow, what a start. The construction phase required making my two-car garage a workshop with power tools, equipment storage, and building an 8-foot portable tool rack with fastener storage on the bottom and a pegboard upper section for tool storage. My den became a dormitory, and my kitchen a cafe. The prayer base was quickly established. Bob Dixon put out a prayer request through Texas Baptist Men. Eula Mae Henderson did the same through the Women's Missionary Union. It was a state missions offering that they promoted, that distributed the WMU information, and provided the $26,000 to build this first mobile disaster unit. It really cost a lot, would have cost a lot more than that, but God showed us how to save money. The WMU prayed and paid for the project. TBM prayed and played a major role in providing workers to build the unit. Our family made the unit and its needs our prayer focus for the entire construction time. My family was a prayer group that majored on the daily needs. For instance, how many workers do we need tomorrow? What projects will we need to complete tomorrow? What supplies will be needed? Where can we obtain the equipment and the equipment that we cannot afford? Well, they covered the details that were constantly emerging as each evening we reviewed the plans in progress, the problems, and put them into prayer. My 9-year-old son took a copy of this list with him everywhere he went. When he prayed, it sounded like he was ordering from a catalog and was expecting a rush delivery. His prayers reminded me so much of Dr. Kerfoot Walker's prayers in the development of the first mobile clinic. His prayer was short, precise, bold, and made with such confidence in the Word of God that I was frequently moved to tears, as I am now. Whew. My wife became the procurement officer. I gave her an equipment and supply list each day. She'd begin her search and obtain operation. She has a tremendous gift for shopping. Her father was a shrewd businessman in Illinois who taught her to always pay cash and always buy wholesale. One example of her expertise was finding and purchasing a 25 kW generator. She found the unit at a used equipment lot in Dallas. This was done with a telephone and the Yellow Pages book. The initial price was $4,000. But before the call was over, she had bargained the owner down to $2,500. When I went to pick it up, the owner said, "That'll be $4,500. I replied, "No, sir. My wife called you and you agreed to $2,500. That woman was your wife? I don't know how she did this to me. I paid $2,500 for it when I bought it," he stammered. I told him this was a church project and that God probably moved him to do it. And he said, "Is he in on this too?" "Oh, well, just give me a check and take it for $2,500. The construction was a series of minor and major miracles. Everything we did was bathed in prayer. Converting a 45 Dorsey moving van, electronics van, into a mobile disaster unit that would house equipment, supplies, office space, crew quarters. That was not the usual construction project by any means. How do you insulate it without building interior walls and losing needed space? I never heard of radiant barrier insulation, but God led me, as I prayed for direction, to glue aluminum foil on the back of 3/16 paneling and screw it to the walls. This effect of that reflective insulation was phenomenal. The type of paneling could not be screwed to the ceiling without making holes in it. It would leak. This called for the construction of an interior ceiling, which would hold paneling and serve as a stabilizing structure for the cabinets that would line the interior walls. How strong should it be? How far beneath the roof should it be? Many questions popped into my mind. I prayed, God answered. A framework of 2x4 boards covered with a 1/4-inch exterior plywood was built. It was attached to the walls 6 inches below the roof. Remember that 6 inches is very important later. This structure was glued and screwed together like a section of an airplane fuselage. It was a strong structure to which the interior cabinets could be attached. I thought that we had actually over-engineered and overbuilt the ceiling, but God knew the future. We did not. In 1974, the unit went to Honduras for Hurricane Fifi. The driver ran into a low bridge in Mexico City and sheared 12 feet of the roof off. But when we opened the doors, we discovered no damage had been done to the interior. The ceiling was undamaged, and all the cabinets were still stable. 3 inches of the upper walls and 12 feet of the roof were wadded up in a massive steel accordion, and the interior ceiling was untouched. Oh, God's good. The bridge's lower girders had sheared off the top at the middle of the separation between the roof and the ceiling. The stiffness or rigidity of the screwed and glued ceiling had held the side walls rigidly while the top was being sheared away, leaving the ceiling undisturbed. The propane gas system was another story. It's an act of God. A chassis-mounted propane tank was necessary to keep the gas from being stored in a closed trailer, because if a leak occurs inside a trailer, that would make the unit a bomb that would go off with the first spark. Because of the trailer's dimensions and limited road clearance, I had to have a tank with special dimensions to hold the necessary amount of propane. My wife had called every propane company in Dallas-Fort Worth area, but no avail. No such tank existed. I called a tank manufacturing company and asked if such a tank was made in Texas. The answer was, nope, but we might be able to make one for you. I jumped in my truck with the drawings and made a dash for the company before someone changed their mind. The company had a piece of pipe the right diameter with very thick walls. They used it for the sides of the tank. The reason I called it an act of God occurred 2 years later. I was driving the rig off a barge in Honduras, and the dock was 4 feet lower than the barge deck. I had stacked thick boards on the dock to make a ramp, but the unloading was complicated by the waves in the harbor. The wind was making 4 to 5 foot swells, which pounded the dock. The bow of the barge was bouncing up and down. It would rise 5 feet above the makeshift ramp and then drop below the ramp. I was trying to time the rise and fall so I could jump the tractor off the ramp, pause, and wait for the proper time to drag the trailer off onto the ramp. The tractor axles were 14 feet apart from front to rear, but it was 45 feet to the trailer's rear axles. I got the tractor off safely, but the time was too short on the next wave to get the trailer completely off. As the barge rose on the swell, everyone started yelling, "Run, run, it's going to blow up." While everyone was diving for cover, I was sitting in the truck cab with 1 foot on the air brakes and 1 foot on the clutch pedal, holding the rig as steady as I could, wondering what in the world's about to blow up behind me. At the same time, I was trying to gauge the right time to jerk the rest of the trailer off the barge. The barge's bow began to lower, and I pulled it completely free from the descending deck. Everyone came out of their cover as I drove off the dock. They told me what had happened. My first lurch from the deck to the board ramp left the propane tank poised over the bow. When the bow rose on the next wave, it struck the middle of the tank, continued rising until the rear axles of the trailer were suspended 3 feet in the air. The entire weight of the trailer and its load were supported by the loaded propane tank alone. Oh, I was so glad. When we built it, they put baffles inside that strengthened the walls as well. Thanking God for his wisdom and guidance in the construction. Whew, man, he guided us to the right company that could create the right tank to solve a problem we had never imagined. It helped us when we stumbled to fall upstairs instead of down. That's God's way. You see, the work on the rig's construction was witnessed by a parade of visitors. Some were my patient neighbors. Some were Baptists who were thrilled that something was being done to minister to disaster victims. And some were people whom God moved to help support the project. One visitor was a computer programmer who was eager to help us create a database for trained volunteers. Oh, that was new in those days. They used cards. Skilled people and resources were on the list you could do. One was a partner in Watson Electric Company. He donated all the electrical supplies, all the tools for the onboard repair shop, the tool storage boxes, and the storm suits, and the rain gear for the entire crew. People like this saved the project thousands of dollars. The donated labor was another blessing. We worked 90 hours each week for 6 weeks to build the unit. My mother-in-law, Elizabeth Baldwin, we called her Becky, who lived with us for 10 years, had owned a restaurant in Illinois. She fed the crews every day with meals and snacks. My son would work after school, picking up scattered tools, screws, bolts, put everything back in their place on the tool rack and in the bins, sweep the area. Then he would go do his homework and join us for our prayer time. John 2, as I call him, familiarity with the unit and its components were to be a surprise blessing in the days to come. When the unit's construction was almost completed, the first call to service came. It had been a torrential rain come through the Guadalupe River area of Texas Hill Country. A 35-foot wall of water came down the river canyon, destroying everything on the river's course that was up to 35 feet above the river. There were houses, mobile homes, cars, debris rolling down the river. Bob Dixon heard the news and called the conference center where Cameron Byler and I were explaining the new disaster program to a group of church recreation directors. Cameron had just said, if a disaster strikes, someone could step in that door and tell us we had a call and we would be gone. We would have to drop everything and respond. At that moment, the camp manager stepped through the door and said, I hate to interrupt, but I have an emergency call for Cameron Byler or for John Lanoue. The recreators thought we'd staged the scene, but they know it was real when they saw the tailgates of our pickup trucks headed out of camp. Bob called and asked, is the unit ready to roll? I replied, yes, sir, it's ready to roll. It was technically ready to roll, but it was not complete. But I didn't think it was proper to burden Bob with unnecessary details. Everything was in place and bolted down. On the tractor was mounted a large generator. In front of the trailer, there was a 1,000-gallon water tank and a pump. Then came the crew kitchen, ice maker, communications office, and the public relations office. In the central area, there was food storage, refrigeration, cooking equipment, toilet, shower for the crew, and the air conditioning unit. The rear area of the trailer held the triple deck bunks for the crew, the first aid area, and it doubled as a conference area during the day as we got the middle bunk to fold down to be a back for the seats. A flat bottom boat and a telescoping radio antenna were suspended from the ceiling. On the curb side of the trailer, I'd built a fold out workbench with a vice and tool storage area for repairing equipment. It was concealed behind the unused door. Everything was in place, but nothing had been tested. There were no automatic controls in place. The voltage regulator and the water pressure were manually adjustable, but not automatic. There would need to be someone monitoring all of these, someone who knew the systems. Bob told us to drive the unit to Seguin, Texas, and set it up in the courthouse parking lot. Oh my, this is where God used my son in a miraculous way. At 9 years old, he'd been reading since he was two, but at 9 years old, well, that's the rest of the story. It's in the next chapter. God bless you for reading, for listening, and remember, God answers prayer. And remember the truth that when there is a problem, get on God's side of it. Don't let it come between you and the Lord. God bless you. Amen. In the last episode, I talked about the disaster relief unit's ready-to-roll business, but not quite complete. But when I got home and got ready to leave in it, I began to pack my bag for the trip and discussing the control problems with Dr. L. That's my wife, my sweetheart. She's known as Kaywin, but everybody knows her as Dr. L. Our son overheard and volunteered, "Dad, I know the systems and the controls. If you'll mark the gauges where you want the indicators to be, I can handle it." Oh my goodness, my 9-year-old boy? Wow. Well, he was pretty precocious, I knew that. So I put on my new disaster relief uniform and he put on his Royal Ambassador uniform. We climbed into the tractor cab together and started our father and son ministry project. John was only 9 years old, but had already won the last two science fairs with his study of the sympathetic and parasympathetic nerve systems and his study of producing antibiotics from soil. Why don't we give him this opportunity? When we were established on site, I put a chair in the place where the controls were. He stayed in that chair 8 hours a day, each day, keeping the gauges in the green, and he washed tables at night. As we drove up to the courthouse, several things made an indelible impression on me. The first was the shocked look on the faces of the city officials of Seguin, who had given us permission to park our feeding unit in front of City Hall. When they stepped through the building's front door and saw an 18-wheeler mobile kitchen parked in the street and our large kitchen canopy tied to their parking meters, they looked stunned. They were thinking of a unit the size of a Salvation Army canteen or an American Red Cross serving truck. But here was a semi-tractor trailer unit that took up all of the parking space in front of the building. The second impression was made by one of our customers, so to speak. A man was eating a bowl of our stew and reading the signs on the side of our unit. He read out loud, "Texas Baptist Disaster Unit." Then he commented, "I did not know Baptists did things like this. I just thought they held revivals and tried to make their churches bigger. I didn't know they really cared about people." Ooh, that hurt. Our mindset had been that we were telling our community we love them when we held a revival. After all, we put out signs, big signs, that said, "Revival, everybody is welcome." Yet we had so often neglected the element of Jesus' ministry, that of meeting human need where he found it. But we heavily emphasized the second element of our ministry, introducing people to God in evangelism. This actually made our ministry appear out of balance to others. The third impression I brought home was the realization that my son had become a 9-year-old old man. For 10 days, he did full-time ministry work, regulating water pressure, adjusting the voltage from our ancient generator, cleaning tables, collecting and compacting garbage, filling ice chests, and telling our volunteers where everything was located. Confirmation of his passage into manhood occurred on the trip home. Cameron Byler, Bob Dixon, Jerry Bob Taylor, and John Tooth and I stopped in Waco, Texas for lunch. We had not had a sit-down meal in almost 2 weeks where we could relax and eat. We went into Hite Miller Steakhouse, grabbed menus, and started unwinding emotionally from the event. Everyone ordered the biggest steak on the menu and loaded baked potatoes. I knew my son's favorite meal was a hamburger and French fried potatoes. But as I gave his order, he said, "Wait a minute, Dad, can I have a steak instead?" I said, "Of course, son. The only pay you ever will get from Texas Baptist Men is good food. Which steak do you want?" He held up his hands about as far apart as his shoulders and said, "Daddy, I want one that big." And he ate every scrap of it. From hamburgers to Hite Miller's sirloin, my son had moved from boyhood to manhood. Oh, by these activities and other mission projects in which he was involved as a child and as a youth, helped set the course of his life. He has shared in the writing of other chapters in this book, but for now, it'd be sufficient for you to know that his journey took him to Baylor University, Southwestern Seminary, University of Texas for pre-med, Texas A&M University for med school, Parkland Hospital in Dallas for his surgical residency, Southwestern Med School faculty to teach trauma surgery, Cincinnati Children's Home to become a pediatric surgeon, and now serving as a neonatal pediatric surgeon in 9 hospitals in the Dallas area. And he's doing missionary work, trips to the Sudan and other countries, also in Zimbabwe, North Korea with me, and Iran with me, as well as the Uganda work that they do at Arua. By the way, that was a great stake. The success of the Seguin operation was wonderful, but we had a lot to learn. We modified our kitchen equipment and kitchen operation to use a varied selection of food types. Milton Schmidt, a kitchen chemist, worked up a set of recipes and trained cooking teams. Other state Baptist conventions heard about the Texas Disaster Relief Program. The idea and the concept began to build momentum. The program struck a chord with the Baptists, who had always wanted to help people in major disaster events, but did not know where to start. Many had responded through other organizations, but now they began to dream of having their own Baptist organization. The Lord was creating a tremendous ministry for Southern Baptists that has grown to such an extent that it is now the third largest disaster response organization in America. Now there are over 1,500 units and 95,000 trained volunteers in the Southern Baptist Convention. As the concept spread, some groups would send me their unit plans and ask for my advice. I learned one thing very quickly. Creative minds do not think alike. The second thing I learned was more important. When God is in charge of a project or a movement, He may lead people to see the same thing from different perspectives and help them develop a different approach to the same problem. Do not criticize them. Trust their walk with God to lead them in the direction He desires. Being on the ground floor of a new ministry has its dangers. Since you are the first with the idea, you have a tendency to think you have more wisdom and answers than those who join the movement later. If you've been walking on your knees in prayer, though, throughout the development of the project, and people have begun to refer to you as the expert, you can very easily develop spiritual arrogance. If people do not do things like you, then they are not following God. Oh boy. Well, I realized this after several months of reviewing plans, modifying plans, and writing critiques on the plans that other Baptist groups sent me. They did very little, if any, of my suggestions, yet everyone developed a unit or units that met their needs and did the job required. Their mobile disaster units were made to function in a manner that fit their different styles of operation. This was proven to me in our response to the Mexico City earthquake disaster. The Texas, Louisiana, Mississippi, and Oklahoma tractor-trailer units were involved. No two of them were alike, but every one of them did the job of feeding thousands of refugees every day for a month. Lieutenant Colonel Jim Ferguson, a retired Marine fighter pilot and Vietnam helicopter veteran, developed the Disaster Relief Roundtable. This was a meeting where all the state disaster directors sat at tables arranged in a huge circle, and their staff sat behind them. The objective was for each group to tell about the disaster events to which they had responded, explain their response to it, and then report on problems and lessons learned. It was a time for displaying new equipment and brainstorming problems as well as possible ministries. It was wonderful. One day, I complimented Jim on the idea for the conference that the tremendous impact it was having on the entire ministry of disaster relief. His reply was, "John, great generals are not made in battle. They're made at the conference table." God had gifted Jim with a faith forged in the heat of combat and the ability to think under pressure and under fire. His military background made him an excellent tactician in using men and machines. He was fantastic at developing strategy based on past problems, their solutions, and expected challenges. He was a God-sent leader with the American Home Mission Board, a leader who never failed to give God the glory. He gave me a greater understanding of how important each worker was individually, as well as a part of the team, to respect the ideas of the new, less experienced workers, and to appreciate the fact that God was always in control. Frequently, God would send us answers to our problems that we could not receive, because our experience in our leadership positions made us feel like we were better at the job than the other new workers bringing us suggestions. Lesson learned Humility is priceless. God bless you. I hope you've learned some things today. In His grip, I'm Dr. John LaNute.